Okay, how do we do a better job? We're not going to get through all of this, but I said this part yesterday. Is up to half of the addicts I deal with have been hurt or turned off by churches and Christians. And so one of the things I ask clients at times is this: if you were really struggling, would you go to a church for help or encouragement? I can say honestly, not one person has said they'd go to church. That's the last person they go. And that is a sad commentary on us. So I want you to know up front this: I am not here with some bone to pick with the church. When I married Kim, she had that false loyalty. And I started pointing out things in her family to her that weren't healthy. And she'd get all mad. And she had never looked at her family honestly to see what was healthy and not, because you just never did that. But what I have to do as a pastor and a leader is I got to look honestly at the family that I'm trying to bring people into. And I have to call them on their stuff because it's doing a ton of damage. And so it might sound like I got kind of a negative bone to pick. It's not that. I love the church and I want it healthy. But in many places, sadly, it is sicker than addicts. One way that I talk about with addicts is this. Sadly, many churches have become dysfunctional families, and they don't see it. And so the people that come in looking for love and healthy just get re-wounded by the church. And so all I'm going to do now is simply give you kind of my observations, stuff that I'm working on, stuff that I think we need to rethink. And so that's my motive behind all of this. But healing, let me talk about this first. Healing from complex trauma. What does it take? Education, we talked about, therapy, support system. And then you have to start building relationships that have intimacy. So those four things, and then you have to learn to manage triggers when you get triggered. So we talked about them, and that was my motivation in starting React, was to provide all five of those on a daily basis to people so that they could heal. Many people, so every treatment center does number one, they give you education. And so what happened is most clients will come into a program, they learn, and they think they've got it. And they go back out into the world and they get triggered. Now they have no place to go. And they don't know how to apply the tools in that moment. And so just education, though it's very important, it's a lot of what I do, isn't enough, is my point. You have to provide the other pieces. A lot of clients just want education because they think if I just learn enough, I can fix it on my own. And it doesn't work. I have dealt with clients that could teach classes better than I can, because they got so much information, they just never put it in practice. And so you have to go more than that. Okay, all my concerns are on the church. Here's the four kind of categories that I would put them under. A distorted view of God, number one. Number two, a distorted view of what the Christian life looks like. Let me put it this way. When the Bible teaches about what does it mean to be a Christian, it talks about justification, sanctification, and glorification, right? So the three parts of our salvation is what it is. So justification is that moment in time where I'm forgiven from my sins, I'm made a child of God, and that's a one-time event. And then my past is forgiven and dealt with. Now I move into sanctification, and that's the slow process of growth and transformation. Okay, and then glorification is the day I go to heaven and I'm transformed and never sin again. Churches do good on justification and glorification. We suck when it comes to teaching sanctification. And much of what I do, if you want to think of it in a biblical perspective, is I just teach sanctification. What does it mean to change and grow? What does that look like? So Paul does this. He says, I work with 100% of my energy and I trust God for 100%. We don't go 100% God and 100% me. That doesn't make sense. We think if it's 100% God, then I do zero. If it's 100% me, then God does nothing. And so guess what addicts love? They love magic pills. So they get attracted to Christianity because they say, come in and God will change you. And to them, 100% God, 0% me. That's distorted. So we can't understand 100% God and 100% me, but that's what the Bible teaches. So I give my 100% effort, but I'm trusting God 100% to somehow provide. And so we have to teach it that way. And then it's just a very messy process and a very slow process. And we don't like messy and we don't like slow. And then the third one, as I just mentioned, churches have become dysfunctional. And we'll talk about that. And the fourth one, when you work today with addicts, you're working with a cross-cultural experience. So if a person wants to be a missionary to China or to a tribe in South America in the Amazon forest, they go for cross-cultural training. Because if you don't go understanding how the people think and how they what their values are, you can go in there with all your Western ideas and destroy it. And so what? Sadly, Christianity in the West has become its own subculture. But it's become out of touch with people outside of that culture. And so we want to bring people into our culture without understanding their culture. And there's a growing gap. And so if we're going to effectively reach out to people in a very different culture, even though they're in the same town and the same neighborhood, we need to understand their culture. You know, one of the sad parts of a dysfunctional family, dad wants the kids to understand what he wants, but he never takes time to understand what the kids are. He never sees the world through their eyes. He never understands and takes time to understand their pain and stress. He just wants them to get him. And the churches can be guilty of the very same thing. So we'll jump around very quickly here. I talked about the dysfunctional family stuff yesterday. I don't want to go into a lot of detail, except to just add this. You can get the Bible and twist it to support dysfunctionality. If you just twist it enough, or if you just look hard enough, you can find a verse you can twist in order to support dysfunction. So I'll give you an example. Ephesians 5 says, wives, submit to your husbands. Amen. And so what does that support? An abusive man. He says, the Bible says you're supposed to do whatever I tell you to. I got a Bible verse to prove it. But here's what I love about the Bible. Did you notice the next verse that follows that? Husbands, love your wives. So whenever there's a relationship in the Bible and there's a difference between the people or parent-child, God gives two commands side by side. He never just gives one command for one of the people. So he doesn't say, wives, submit to your husbands, and stop there. He says, no, there's two people in this. I need to give a second command to the husbands. And what does he say? Husbands, submit to your wives. Basically what he says. So marriage is a relationship of mutual submission by mutual love. Then he goes on, or in the next chapter, he says, children, obey your parents. What does every complex dad love? That verse. Children, you're supposed to obey me. You want to know what he says? The next verse? Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger. Don't create complex trauma. And so God always puts them, because we kind of pick one and forget the other, because it suits us. And God says, I'm not going to let you do that. You've got to look at both and bring them into balance. Otherwise, you'll end up with distortions. So if you grew up in church like I did, I've been going to church since I was in my mother's womb, 5 times a week, most of my upbringing, I could tell you every verse that's been used to support sick stuff. Because the Bible, if you twist it enough, you can make that happen. And so the danger is, it's not just that you twisted the Bible. It's now you say, I got God on my side. And God is a club now, so that's spiritual abuse. And the damage that does is even greater than the twisting of the verse. Because now you say, God's on my team. And he supports what I'm doing. Okay, enough on that. Oh, so the other thing that happens with that, so when you say wives submit to your husband and you camp there, you're not just overlooking this next verse, you have to overlook much of the Bible. So the Bible always gives a complete picture, but you got to look at all of the Bible, not just one little verse. And so why did God take Eve out of Adam's rib? I can't prove this, but I think if he took it out of his head, it would be that women are over men. If he took it out of his toes, it'd be men are over women. He took out a rib because we're equal. We're side by side. And then you go through the Bible, and it says God created man in his image, but the word for man is humans. We're both created in God's image. We're both equal, and then God never supports abuse or selfishness, so don't use a verse to try to support it. So you got to look at the bigger picture. And so all of that complex trauma, families live with double standards. So it goes like this. Dad says, I can be angry, but nobody else can. Mom says, I can be sad, but nobody else can. So there's always two standards or three standards. And it's very easy to do that. And as churches, we got to watch out we don't fall into that. And the other thing then that happens when you have an abusive authority is if something's wrong, it's your fault. They will twist every conflict to make it your fault, not their fault. They'll never own their own stuff. And so humility becomes a good thing, important thing. What happens in a lot of churches is this. You say to people, you're depressed, you just need to pray more and have faith. They come back a month later, they're still depressed. What do we say? You must be doing something wrong. We turn it back on them. We don't say maybe our theology's wrong and look at ourselves. We turn it back on them. That is dysfunction. Okay. Next thing, and this, some of you are going to get a little bit uncomfortable with this, but growing up in church, what I realized over time was we have hundreds of unspoken rules. We don't even know, like we couldn't even verbalize them unless somebody did something wrong. So I asked a guy once, I said, what would you do if a guy came in here with a baseball cap on? I say you have to get rid of it. Why? Well, that's wrong. This is God's place of worship. Could you show me a verse in the Bible that says that? But what I found was there's this huge emotional response to what he thought was proper. So let me take that a little bit further. Definition of legalism goes like this. So let's say that you were raised in the hippie generation, okay? And so part of the hippie generation was long hair and all of that stuff. And then you become a Christian and you say, for me, long hair was a rebellious act. It was a defiant act. So I'm gonna cut my hair short as my own way of saying, God, I never want to rebel again. Okay? That's beautiful. That's perfect. Where legalism comes in is the person that comes in next Sunday with long hair. And you go to them and say, you need to cut your hair. That's legalism. So what I have developed as what I think my relationship with God needs and what it looks like in externals, I now impose on others. So we just had a situation. So React, we use a church. They give it to us free of charge. And so we tell people, this is your home. Treat it like you're at home. So there's a couch. And one day, one of the clients had a really tough morning with a lot of painful stuff. And at lunchtime, they flaked out on the couch. The church secretary came in, flipped out. You can't sleep on a couch in church. And I just was livid. Because that's legalism. Now I'm going to push your buttons a little bit here, okay? Tattoos. Clients always ask me, what do you think about tattoos? I say, I got no problem with tattoos. Oh, good. I go, but wait, I'm not done. I want to know why you want a tattoo. It's your motive that I care about. It's not whether or not you end up with a tattoo. There's no verse in the Bible that says you can not have a tattoo. Well, there is one, but it's in the context that people got a certain tattoo as part of a religion that involved child sacrifice. So God said, don't be identifying with that religion, so don't get those tattoos. But Christians get all bent out of shape when guys walk in with piercings everywhere and tattoo sleeves, and they go, oh, that's terrible. And I go, that's beautiful. It's not the issue what the body looks out on the outside. It's the heart attitude. We got to get past that. Next one, swearing. Do you realize there's no verse in the Bible that says I can't use the F word? And believe it or not, just so you know, I'm a pastor, I use the F word all the time when I teach. And you know, clients come to me and go, we're so thankful we find a Christian that swears good. But here's what I want you to get. Some of you are going to get upset with me. There's nothing, if you go to any addict and you say, when you use the F word, are you doing it in a crass, mean way? No, it's just the best adjective I could find. And so it's just a word to them. I always laugh growing up, because I wasn't even allowed to say darn or bloody or any of those words. That was swearing. And here I listen to Christians say, you can't say the F word, and then they say that friggin' thing. And I go, what's the difference? You just used an F version that you now say is right. So every addict that's grown up in that, they have very colorful language. If you don't just accept that, but get all bent out of shape and say, you got to stop talking like that, you're going to do damage. When I worked at a treatment center, they had a rule that you could swear, but when you're sharing painful stuff, if you swear, that's fine because you're talking from a deep, dark place, but you can't swear any other time. And I always laugh because when one of the counselors would get mad, they'd be F-bomb this, F-bomb that. And I go, okay, you're not living by your own rules now. It's all right for you to use the F-bomb when you're upset, but you're not going to allow us. So that's just the language thing. That is a very sensitive thing. But if we want to reach that culture, that is not a bad thing in that culture. If you talk to any addict, they'll say this. I know there are times when I use the F-bomb when I'm trying to hurt somebody. I can make that distinction. But most of the time I use the F-bomb, it's just another innocent word. So we can't moralize that for them. Okay, next one.
Question about that though.
Yep.
In just going from observation.
Your kids are taking notes on this.
How do you observe change as people heal?
Okay, very good.
I have.
And this will go in different directions. Some find that if they start swearing more when they get angry, that they're heading in a dark direction. They're heading towards a relapse. So their language sometimes is an indicator of how well they're doing emotionally. But others, they will swear for the rest of their life. It's not a moral thing with them. For others, there's a moral element. And so it can look differently in different ways. I'll tell you this story, because to me it's a beautiful one. It's actually on one of the talks on the internet. But Jason, who was the guy that got me to start finding freedom and really became our first surrogate child, and I said he was with Hell's Angels, he was a muscular enforcer, bodybuilder, all of that. Every second word was the F word. That's the way he talked. And I just never made a deal out of it, loved him, listened to him, etc. He came to my office one day, and he says, can you please tell me how to have a relationship with God? So I explained to him why Jesus had to die. And I said, picture yourself as being the judge of Winnipeg, and you have a daughter. Because he had a daughter. And I said, let's say she goes out and murders somebody. And now she comes and stands trial before you. Your justice says she has to be punished, but your love says you want to forgive her. But you can't just sweep it under the carpet. It's because your justice and forgiveness are in contradiction. So what could you do to solve that dilemma? You could step up as the judge and say, you're guilty, I condemn you to life in prison. Then you take your robe off and come down and say, I will take your place. There you satisfied your justice and you satisfied your love. The penalty is still being paid. Okay, that's all right. We can come back to that. But what he then did is he started crying. And he said, holy fuck. Nobody's ever loved me like that. He was worshiping with the F word. It was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. But it, so that, again, to him, it, that was a word he just used to add to. Yeah, so. So definition of legal.
What we're doing then is we're looking for how can we prove to ourselves that we did a good thing.
Right.
She's not swearing, so I'm good.
Right. Yeah.
We're all good. But she's not swearing, we're good.
But I think as people learn to love one another, they accommodate, they point to whatsoever things are good and pure.
Right.
And what I observe with breath divine is
right. Exactly.
Sit back and wait. They'll be telling you.
Exactly. Exactly. So the definition of legalism is that I define spirituality by external behaviors. If you go back to the Beatitudes and start with the internal attitudes, then they will take place naturally. But we have to be careful because some people, for them, it might be okay to go to a horror movie, and another person says, I could never do that. That would, and so there's a gray area in there that we have to have grace in. And that's the part that a lot of us want to try to use the verses, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, and then without really saying it, we're defining what it is, that you have to act this way. And that's the danger. So whatever's pure, and whatever's lovely, there's going to be a gray. So I deal with clients all the time, and they ask me, if I'm a godly person, can I masturbate? I go, that's a gray area. The Bible doesn't really talk about it. You have to sort that out with God. I'm not going to tell you a legalistic rule around that, because that would be my own personal opinion. But God doesn't touch on that. And so those become those gray areas that the Bible is silent, and we have to let God's Spirit lead. So the beauty of this, for me, is this. Jesus said this, John the Baptist never drank and never partied. The Son of Man comes along and he drinks and parties. Both were the most godly men in the world. They lived in two different ways. And so that, to me, is there's gray areas that God can lead one person differently than he could another. And we don't like that because it makes it messy. We want it all neat and tidy. Exactly.
I'm trying to like work it and I'm like starting to walk on eggshells and I'm like, wait a minute, that's where grace is.
Exactly.
And I want to say it this way, and I can't even really try to share this, but it's that I've been getting some feedback, or you're not like soliciting, but just like being rushing or I'm walking out there. And people from the church that I've seen for a few months here, but actually getting more and more feedback. And I've heard people, and I used to try and tell them themselves about just being curious. Why do I see that? Because I do it too. And so I'm saying this a lot because I love you. I love you. You want to talk about this.
Yeah.
Right? And so what I think is beautiful about this is that what's happening, we're having dialogue, and we don't have to be any. We get to. And so I'm very proud of this church. I've never been more proud of this church, of what happens and how we dialogue. And people have been, you know, I'm not happy, but I'm sure Mark, I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Exactly. Exactly.
So anyways, I just wanted to include myself that, you know what, if you want to say that I don't judge, I don't have a mental model of what you have, I do that. But then I'm like, well, okay, what's going on? I'm able to take ownership of it, you know what? And one last thing is just like, even what went on in the spirit of the heart, because sometimes I do, I secretly clean up my language when I think I'm doing more recovery and whatnot, but then at times I'll just like, but no different than someone called me on the road and treated me like human, right?
Yep.
Yep. So humor can be a beautiful light thing.
Exactly.
But at times I can act out on that either.
Yep.
And so I don't have it worked out about that bond or not. But on to communicating what I'm doing to all spiritually, it just kind of takes care of itself.
Yep. Okay, just let me make a comment and then we're going to jump here. What I have said to churches that have wanted to start having addicts come is be prepared to get pushed out of your comfort zone and be prepared to have every little unspoken rule challenged. Because they will talk to each other in the service. They'll get up and walk out and get a coffee. They'll come in with a mini skirt on and all of that kind of stuff. And everybody's, ah! Get used to it. That's their world. That's acceptable in their world. And so if we don't accept that and take them aside and say, you shouldn't be dressing like that or whatever, that just sends all the wrong messages. Okay.
Well, I think the part that really bothers me and I think is so uncool about the church is I think it's about God. Everything that people do and say, like, when somebody makes a comment like, yeah, but we will see them eventually move in that direction, or they will eventually clean up this, or whatever. When I hear something like that, I am assuming they are thinking they're representing God.
Yep.
In other words, God is like that. And I know God's not like that because I have my own experience of God. And now when I have my experience of God compared with the experience that I hear from coming from others, I think your experience has got to be wrong because my God actually does not care about that. So if your experience is wrong and you're in the church, then the church's got to be wrong.
Right. Well said. And you put into words what I've been trying to communicate. And that's where we can actually, as churches, have blind spots about where we're going wrong and hurting others. And we can doctor it up as being righteous when really it's not.
Dialogue, having dialogue. One of the biggest deterrents to dialogue is everybody sitting this way. And one of the biggest problems we have, in our society is that we're not like Asians.
Yeah. Let me just add on that. When I first brought Jason to church, he wanted to come to church, I was very curious as to what he was going to be looking for. And so what surprised me, and I want you to hear this, is this. His number one priority, are these people real? Do they just talk from their head? Do they just wear a smile, but it's all fake? Does anybody ever get honest about their pain? Or do they just have you pray for somebody in the hospital in a physical need? Or do they share their own pain? That was his priority. And if they don't feel real, they know they'll never fit in. And so that's where we have to work on our stuff. And we have to be real and growing and honest and humble. That's the only way we can really reach these people. So reaching complex trauma people is not about putting on a program. It's about being real ourselves, being humble. That's what will keep them coming. Okay.
Reach out, take my hand. And the person couldn't because they were too big.
Exactly.
And I think that that's really important to define kind of the difference between, you know, you don't have to do it my way, but what can I do to help you?
Yes.
Right? And then even if you don't know, then you can, you know, say, well, I don't know, but I think Joe Blow knows.
Yeah.
Why don't I give you his number? Right? Because we, you know, we don't
exactly.
know all the answers.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's well said. Thank you. Kind of re-emphasizes what we've been trying to communicate, but it comes from another mouth besides mine, so that's important. But really, I think, I'm hoping you're hearing, is we have so much to offer, but we're our own worst enemies sometimes. We get in the way at times of what God wants to do, but yet, we haven't even thought through exactly every aspect of our belief system and our life.